Welcome back to Sci-Fi Tales. I'm your host, Shahrazad, and today we delve deeper into the mesmerizing narrative of the relations of Sidi Khur. Get ready for two thrilling stories that will transport you to distant realms and ignite your imagination. Sit back, relax, and let the adventure unfold. When the son of the Chan arrived as before at the cold forest of death, he exclaimed with threatening gestures at the foot of the Amiri tree, "Thou dead one, descend, or I will hew down the tree." Sidi descended. The son of Chan placed him in the sack, bound the sack fast with the rope, ate of his provender, and journeyed forth with his burden. Then spake the dead one these words, "Since we have a long journey before us, do you relate a pleasant story by the way, or I will do so." But the son of the Chan merely shook his head, without speaking a word. Whereupon Sidi commenced the following tale. A long time ago, there was a mighty Chan, who was ruler over a country full of marketplaces. At the source of the river, which ran through it, there was an immense marsh. And in this marsh, there dwelt two crocodile frogs, who would not allow the water to run out of the marsh. And because there came no water over their fields, every year did both the good and the bad have cause to mourn, until such times as a man had been given to the frogs for the pests to devour. And at length the lot fell upon the Chan himself to be an offering to them, and needful as he was to the welfare of the kingdom, denial availed him not. Therefore father and son communed sorrowfully together, saying, "Which of us two shall go?" "I am an old man," said the father, "and shall leave no one to lament me. I will go, therefore. Do you remain here, my son, and reign according as it is appointed." "O Tungari," exclaimed the son, "verily this is not as it should be. Thou hast brought me up with care, O my father. If the Chan and the wife of the Chan remain, what need is there of their son? I then will go, and be as a feast for the frogs." Thus spake he, and the people walked sorrowfully round about him, and then betook themselves back again. Now the son of the Chan had for his companion the son of a poor man, and he went to him and said, "Walk ye according to the will of your parents, and remain at home in peace and safety. I am going, for the good of the kingdom, to serve as a sacrifice to the frogs." At these words, the son of the poor man said, weeping and lamenting, "From my youth up, O Chan, thou hast carefully fostered me. I will go with thee and share thy fate." Then they both arose and went unto the frogs, and on the verge of the marsh they heard the yellow frog and the blue frog conversing with one another. And the frog said, "If the son of the Chan and his companion did but know that if they only smote off our heads with the sword, and the son of the Chan consumed me, the yellow frog, and the son of the poor man consumed thee, the blue frog, they would both cast out from their mouths gold and brass. Then would the country be no longer compelled to find food for frogs." Now, because the son of the Chan understood all sorts of languages, he comprehended the discourse of the frogs, and he and his companion smote the heads of the frogs with their swords. And when they had devoured the frogs, they threw out from their mouths gold and brass at their heart's pleasure. Then said the wanderers, "The frogs are both slain. The course of the waters will be hemmed in no more. Let us then turn back unto our own country." But the son of the Chan agreed not to this, and said, "Let us not turn back into our own country, lest they say they are become spirits. Therefore, it is better that we journey further." As they thereupon were walking over a mountain, they came to a tavern, in which dwelt two women, beautiful to behold, mother and daughter. Then said they, "We would buy strong liquor that we might drink." The women replied, "What have ye to give in exchange for strong liquor?" Thereupon each of them threw forth gold and brass, and the women found pleasure therein, admitted them into their dwelling, gave them liquor in abundance until they became stupid and slept, took from them what they had, and then turned them out of doors. Now when they awoke, the son of the Chan and his companion travelled along a river and arrived in a wood, where they found some children quarrelling one with another. "Wherefore," inquired they, do you thus dispute?" "We have," said the children, "found a cap in this wood, and everyone desires to possess it." "Of what use is the cap?" "The cap has this wonderful property, that whosoever places it on his head can be seen neither by the Tangari, nor by men, nor by the Chadkurs, evil spirits. Now go all of ye to the end of the forest and run hither, and I will in the meanwhile keep the cap and give it to the first of you who reaches me." Thus spoke the son of the Chan, and the children ran, but they found not the cap, for it was upon the head of the Chan. "Even now it was here," said they, "and now it is gone." And after they had sought for it, but without finding it, they went away weeping. And the son of the Chan and his companion travelled onwards, and at last they came to a forest in which they found a body of Chadkurs quarrelling one with another, and they said, "Wherefore do ye thus quarrel one with another?" "I," exclaimed each of them, "have made myself master of these boots." "Of what use are these boots?" inquired the son of the Chan. "He who wears these boots," replied the Chadkurs, "is conveyed to any country wherein he wishes himself." "Now," answered the son of the Chan, "go all of you that way, and he who first runs hither shall obtain the boots." And the Chadkurs, when they heard these words, ran as they were told. But the son of the Chan had concealed the boots in the bosom of his companion, who had the cap upon his head, and the Chadkurs saw the boots no more. They sought them in vain, and went their way. And when they were gone, the prince and his companion drew on each of them one of the boots, and they wished themselves near the place of election in a Chan's kingdom. They wished their journey, laid themselves down to sleep, and on their awaking in the morning, they found themselves in the hollow of a tree, right in the centre of the imperial place of election. It was, moreover, a day for the assembling of the people, to throw a baling, a sacred figure of dhow or paste, under the guidance of the Tangari, upon whose head even the baling falls, he shall be our Shan. Thus spake they as they threw it up, but the tree caught the baling of destiny. "What means this?" exclaimed they all, with one accord. "Shall we have a tree for our Shan?" "Let us examine," cried they one to another, "whether the tree concealeth any stranger." And when they approached the tree, the son of the Chan and his companion stepped forth. But the people stood yet in doubt, and said one to another thus, "Whosoever ruleth over the people of this land, this shall be decided tomorrow morning, by what proceedeth from their mouths." And when they had thus spoken, they all took their departure. On the following morning, some drank water, and what they threw from their mouths was white. Others ate grass, and what they threw from their mouths was green. In short, one threw one thing, and another another thing. But because the son of the Chan and his companion cast out from their mouths gold and brass, the people cried, "Let the one be Chan of this people, let the other be his minister." Thus were they nominated Chan and minister, and the daughter of the former. Chan was appointed the wife of the new Chan. Now, in the neighbourhood of the palace wherein the Chan dwelt, was a lofty building, whither the wife of the Chan betook herself every day. "Wherefore," thought the minister, "does the wife of the Chan betake herself to this spot every day?" Thus thinking, he placed the wonderful cap upon his head and followed the Chan's wife through the open doors, up one step after another, up to the roof. Here the wife of the Chan gathered together silken coverlets and pillows, made ready various drinks and delicate meats, and burnt for their perfume tapers and frankincense. The minister, being concealed by his cap, which made him invisible, seated himself by the side of the Chan's wife and looked around on every side. Shortly afterwards, a beautiful bird swept through the sky. The wife of the Chan received it with fragrance-giving tapers. The bird seated itself upon the roof and twittered with a pleasing voice. But out of the bird came Solangdu, the son of the Tangari, whose beauty was incomparable, and he laid himself on the silken coverlets and fed of the dainties prepared for him. Then spake the son of the Tangari, thou hast passed this morning with the husband whom thy fate has allotted to thee. What thinkest thou of him? The wife of the Chan answered, I know too little of the prince to speak of his good qualities or his defects. Thus passed the day, and the wife of the Chan returned home again. On the following day, the minister followed the wife of the Chan, as he had done before, and heard the son of the Tangari say unto her, Tomorrow I will come like a bird of paradise to see thine husband. And the wife of the Chan said, Be it so. The day passed over, and the minister said to the Chan, In yonder palace lives Solangdu, the beauteous son of the Tangari. The minister then related all that he had witnessed, and said, Tomorrow early, the son of the Tangari will seek thee, disguised like a bird of paradise. I will seize the bird by the tail, and cast him into the fire, but you must smite him in pieces with the sword. On the following morning, the Chan and the wife of the Chan were seated together, when the son of the Tangari, transformed into a bird of paradise, appeared before them on the steps that led to the palace. The wife of the Chan greeted the bird with looks expressive of pleasure, but the minister, who had on his invisible making cap, seized the bird suddenly by the tail and cast him into the fire. And the Chan smote at him violently with his sword. But the wife of the Chan seized the hand of her husband, so that only the wings of the bird were scorched. Alas, poor bird, exclaimed the wife of the Chan. As half dead, it made its way, as well as it could, through the air. On the next morning, the wife of the Chan went as usual to the lofty building, and this time too did the minister follow her. She collected together, as usual, the silken pillows, but waited longer than she was wont, and sat watching with staring eyes. At length, the bird approached with a very slow flight, and came down from the birdhouse covered with blood and wounds, and the wife of the Chan wept at the sight. Weep not, said the son of the Tangari. Thine husband has a heavy hand. The fire has so scorched me that I can never come more. Thus spoke he, and the wife of the Chan replied, Do not say so, but come as you are wont to do, at least come on the day of the full moon. Then the son of the Tangari flew up to the sky again, and the wife of the Chan began from that time to love her husband with her whole heart. Then the minister placed his wonderful cap upon his head, and drawing near to a pagoda, he saw, through the crevice of the door, a man who spread out a figure of an ass, rolled himself over and over upon the figure, thereupon took upon himself the form of an ass, and ran up and down braying like one. Then he began rolling afresh, and appeared in his human form. At last he folded up the paper, and placed it in the hand of a Burshan, a Kalmuk idol. And when the man came out, the minister went in, procured the paper, and remembering the ill treatment which he had formerly received, he went to the mother and daughter who had sold him the strong liquor, and said, with crafty words, I am come to you to reward you for your good deeds. With these words, he gave the women 3 pieces of gold, and the women asked him, saying, Thou art indeed an honest man, but where did you procure so much gold? Then the minister answered, By merely rolling backwards and forwards over this paper did I procure this gold. On hearing these words, the women said, Grant us that we too may roll upon it. And they did so, and were changed into asses. And the minister brought the asses to the Chan, and the Chan said, Let them be employed in carrying stones and earth. Thus spake he. And for 3 years were these 2 asses compelled to carry stones and earth. And their backs were sore wounded and covered with bruises. Then saw the Chan their eyes filled with tears. And he said to the minister, Torment the poor brutes no longer. Thereupon they rolled upon the paper, and after they had done so, they were changed to 2 shriveled women. Poor creatures, exclaimed the son of the Chan. Sidi replied, Ruler of destiny, thou hast spoken words. Sawala misdu jakzank. Thus spoke he, and flew out of the sack through the air. And Sidi's second relation treats of the adventures of the poor man's son. When the son of the Chan arrived at the foot of the Amiri tree, and spoke as he had formerly done, Sidi approached him, suffered himself to be placed in the sack, fastened with the rope, and carried away. Sidi spoke as before, but the son of the Chan shook his head, whereupon Sidi began as follows. A long time ago there lived in a certain country a poor man, who had nothing in the world but one cow, and because there was no chance of the cow's calving, he was sore grieved, and said, "If my cow does not have a calf, I shall have no more milk, and I must then die of hunger and thirst." But when a certain number of moons had passed, instead of the calf the poor man had looked for, he found a man with horns and with a long tail like a cow. And at the sight of this monster, the owner of the beast was filled with vexation, and he lifted up his staff to kill him. But the horned man said, "Kill me not, father, and your mercy shall be rewarded." And with these words, he retreated into the depth of a forest, and there he found among the trees a man of sable hue. "Who art thou?" inquired Masang the Horned. "I was born of the forest," was the reply, "and am called Ida. I will follow thee whithersoever thou goest." And they journeyed forth together, and at last they reached a thickly covered grassy plain, and there they beheld a green man. "Who art thou?" inquired they. "I was born of the grass," replied the green man, "and will bear thee company." Thereupon they all three journeyed forth together, until they came to a sedgy marsh, and there they found a white man. "Who art thou?" inquired they. "I was born of the sedges," replied the white man, "and will bear thee company." Thereupon they all four journeyed forth together, until they reached a desert country, where, in the very depths of the mountain, they found a hut, and because they found plenty both to eat and to drink in the hut, they abode there. Every day three of them went out hunting, and left the fourth in charge of the hut. On the first day, Idar, the son of the forest, remained in the hut, and was busied preparing milk and cooking meat for his companions, when a little old woman put up the ladder and came in at the door. "Who's there?" exclaimed Idar, and upon looking round, he beheld an old woman about a span high, who carried on her back a little sack. "Oh, what? There is somebody sitting there," said the old woman, "and you are cooking meat. Let me, I beseech you, taste a little milk and a little meat." And though she merely tasted a little of each, the whole of the food disappeared. When the old woman thereupon took her departure, the son of the forest was ashamed that the food had disappeared, and he arose and looked out of the hut. And as he chanced to perceive two hooves of a horse, he made with them a number of horses' footmarks around the dwelling, and shot an arrow into the core. And when the hunters returned home and inquired of him, "Where is the milk and the fatted meat?" he answered them, saying, "There came 100 horsemen, who pressed their way into the house, and took the milk and the flesh, and they have beaten me almost to death. Go ye out, and look around." And his companions went out when they heard these words, looked around, saw the prints of the horse's feet, and the arrow which he himself had shot, and said, "The words which he spoke are true." On the following day, the son of the grass remained at home in the hut, and it befell him as it had befallen his companion on the previous day. But because he perceived the feet of two bullocks, he made with them the marks of the feet of many bullocks around the dwelling, and said to his companions, "There came 100 people with laden bullocks, and robbed me of the food I had prepared for you." Thus spake he falsely. On the third day, the son of the sedges remained at home in the hut, and because he met with no better fortune, he made, with a couple of the feet of a mule, a number of prints of mule's feet around the dwelling, and said to his companions, 100 men with laden mules surrounded the house, and robbed me of the food I had prepared for you." Thus spake he falsely. On the following day, Masang remained at home in the hut, and as he was sitting, preparing milk and flesh for his companions, the little old woman stepped in as before and said, "Oh, so there is somebody here this time. Let me, I pray you, taste a little of the milk and a little of the meat." At these words, Masang considered, "Of a certainty, this old woman has been here before. If I do what she requires of me, how do I know that there will be any left? And having thus considered, he said to the old woman, Old woman, before thou tastest food, fetch me some water. Thus spoke he, giving her a bucket, of which the bottom was drilled full of holes, to fetch water in. When the old woman was gone, Masang looked after her, and found that the span-high old woman, reaching now up to the skies, drew the bucket full of water again and again, but that none of the water remained in it. While she was thus occupied, Masang peeped into the little sack which she carried on her shoulders, and took out of it a coil of rope, an iron hammer, and a pair of iron pincers, and put in their place some very rotten cords, a wooden hammer, and wooden pincers. He had scarcely done so before the old woman returned, saying, I cannot draw water in your bucket. If you will not give me a little of your food to taste, let us try our strength against each other. Then the old woman drew forth the coil of rotten cords and bound Masang with them. But Masang put forth his strength and burst the cords asunder. But when Masang had bound the old woman with her own coil and deprived her of all power of motion, she said unto him, Herein thou hast gotten the victory. Now let us pinch each other with the pincers. Whereupon Masang nipped hold of a piece of the old woman's flesh as big as one's head and tore it forcibly from her. Indeed, youth, cried the old woman, sighing, but thou hast gotten a hand of stone. Now let us hammer away at each other. So saying, she smote Masang with the wooden hammer on his breast, but the hammer flew from the handle, and Masang was left without a wound. Then drew Masang the iron hammer out of the fire and smote the old woman with it in such wise that she fled from the hut crying and wounded. Shortly after this, the three companions returned home and said to Masang, Now, Masang, thou hast surely had something to suffer. But Masang replied, Ye are all cowardly fellows and have uttered lies. I have paid off the old woman. Arise and let us follow her. At these words they arose, followed her by the traces of her blood, and at length reached a gloomy pit in a rock. At the bottom of this pit there were 10 double circular pillars, and on the ground lay the corpse of the old woman, among gold, brass, and armour, and other costly things. Will you three descend, said Masang, and then pack together the costly things, and I will draw them up, or I will pack them, and you shall draw them out. But the three companions said, We will not go down into the cavern, for of a verity the old woman is a Shumnu, a witch. But Masang, without being dispirited, allowed himself to be let down into the cavern, and collected the valuables, which were then drawn forth by his companions. Then his companions spoke with one another, saying, If we draw forth Masang, he will surely take all these treasures to himself. It were better, then, that we should carry away these treasures, and leave Masang behind in the cavern. When Masang noticed that his three companions treated him thus ungratefully, he looked about the cavern in search of food, but between the pillars he found nothing but some pieces of bark. Thereupon Masang planted the bark in the earth, nourished it as best he might, and said, If I am a true Masang, then from this bark let there grow forth three great trees. If I am not, then shall I die here in this pit. After these enchanting words, he laid himself down, but from his having come in contact with the corpse of the old woman, he slept for many years. When he awoke, he found three great trees, which reached to the mouth of the pit. Joyfully clambered he up and betook himself to the hut, which was in the neighbourhood. But, because there was no longer anyone to be found therein, he took his iron bow and his arrows, and set forth in search of his companions. These had built themselves houses and taken wives. Where are your husbands? Inquired Masang of their wives. Our husbands are gone to the chase, replied they. Then Masang took arrow and bow and set forth. His companions were returning from the chase with venison, and when they beheld Masang with arrow and bow, they cried, as with one accord, Thou art the well-skilled one. Take thou our wives and property. We will now wander forth further. At these words, Masang said, Your behaviour was certainly not what it should have been. but I am going to reward my father. Live on, therefore, as before. By the way, Masang discovered a brook, and out of the brook arose a beautiful maiden. The maiden went her way, and flowers arose out of her footsteps. Masang followed the maiden until he arrived in heaven, and when he was come there, Churmusta Tungari, the protector of the earth, said unto him, It is well that thou art come hither, Masang. We have daily to fight with the host of Shumnu, witches. Tomorrow look around. After tomorrow be companion unto us. On the following day, when the white host were sore pressed by the black, Churmusta spake unto Masang, The white host are the host of the Tangari, the black are the host of the Shumnu. Today the Tangari will be pressed by the Shumnu. Draw, therefore, thy bow, and send an arrow into the eye of the leader of the black host. Then Masang aimed at the eye of the leader of the black host, and smote him, so that he fled with a mighty cry. Then spake Churmusta to Masang, Thy deed is deserving of reward. Henceforward dwell with us forever. But Masang replied, I go to reward my father. Hereupon Churmusta presented to Masang Chindamani, the wonderstone of the gods, and said unto him, By a narrow, circuitous path you will reach the cave of the Shumnu. Go without fear or trembling therein. Knock at the door and say, I am the human physician. They will then lead thee to the Shumnu Chan, that you may draw out the arrow from his eyes. Then lay hands upon the arrow, scatter 7 sorts of grain towards heaven, and drive the arrow yet deeper into his head. Thus spake Churmusta authoritatively, and Masang obeyed his commands, reached, without erring, the cavern of the Shumnu, and knocked at the door. What hast thou learned? Inquired the woman. I am a physician, answered Masang. And he was conducted into the building. He examined the wound of the Chan and laid hands upon the arrow. Already, said the Chan, my wound feels better. But Masang suddenly drove the arrow further into the head, scattered the 7 grains towards heaven, and a chain fell clattering from heaven down to earth. But while Masang was preparing to lay hands upon the chain, the Shumnu woman smote him with an iron hammer, with such force that from the blow there sprang forth 7 stars. Then, said the son of the Chan, he was not able to reward his father. Ruler of destiny, thou hast spoken words. Sarwala, Misdood, Jonksang. Thus spake Sidi, and burst from the sack through the air. Thus, Sidi's third relation treats of the adventures of Masang. Thank you for listening, dear listeners. I hope you liked my tale. If you did, please follow me on Sci-Fi Tales to listen to more tales every week. You can also share your thoughts and opinions on our social media. I appreciate your feedback and support. Don't miss the next episode of Sci-Fi Tales, the show where we bring you stories of science fiction and fantasy. Good night, and see you soon.